You are listening to Bit Podcast, a business podcast series produced by Bitpod on behalf of PKF Malta.
Hello and welcome to our next Bitpod session. Today with us, I have Dr. Clara Tsopardinain, who is the Deputy Dean of the Faculty for Social Wellbeing at the University of Malta. And we are going to discuss the menstrual leave, which lately was a major ongoing topic here in Malta, on whether or not should such policy be implemented. So in today's session, we are going to discuss menstrual leave in more detail. Hello, Dr. Claire, and thank you for accepting our invite.
Thank you for the invitation.
To start off, can you tell us more about what is menstrual leave and why is it being implemented?
Menstrual leave allows a menstruator to take time off if they are unable to attend work due to their menstruation.
And what may be the pros and cons of menstrual leave, and how can it impact the workplace?
Those who propose menstrual leave argue that such policies have the potential to destigmatize discussion of menstruation in the workplace and may be helpful to those who experience pain and menstrual cycle related conditions such as endometriosis. What we know though is that there is a lack of research on the effects of these policies on both the menstruators and menstrual stigma, as well as lack of research on how it affects the places of employment that are offering such leave. There is no research to date on the ways in which menstrual leave may be counterproductive to the overall welfare of menstruators through what we call unintended consequences, such as discrimination in hiring practices, such as salaries, wages, and promotion.
Having said this, do you think that menstrual leave can disincentivize the employer from hiring women?
Well, many cultures, probably including ours, stress absenteeism and hyper-productivity in the workplace over health and well-being, which can endanger an employee's health. So in workplaces that stress these qualities, the ideal employee would be someone who is always available to the employer, who does not bring family concerns or outside work matters to work. If this is the mind frame, menstrual leave may incentivize the employer to recruit males instead of females. So it can be.
Even as well, if we look here at the moment, females, they always are discriminated against men because of they bring maternity leave and even more disincentivize the employers from employing them.
Yes, I mean, there is still this kind of discourse on women's issues, unfortunately.
Yeah. And if Malta was to introduce such policy, do you think that it should be extended to all women or specifically for those women that have conditions that lead to menstrual pain?
I think we require a discussion about this, a national discussion. There are places that did it differently, like, for example, Italy in 2017 proposed a bill for a menstrual leave policy to Parliament, which would ensure that companies grant 3 paid days per month to female employees who experience painful periods, as long as they provide a medical certificate from a doctor. Other places, like, for example, Chile, women get paid leave if they have been diagnosed with endometriosis or similar conditions. While, for example, most recently, Spain introduced menstrual leave, and it does not specify that the menstruator needs to be diagnosed with a condition, but instead, again, requires a doctor's certificate that the employee is unable to attend work because of physical distress caused by the menstruation.
And do you think that menstrual leave should be extended to women in education setting as well?
I do believe that this policy also should be present in educational settings for the learners, and that these policies promote well-being by providing additional opportunities to care for oneself, for example, by providing working flexibility or studying from home.
Yes, yes. And in some news portals, you have mentioned that if this policy had to be introduced, it might have different effects depending on how it is implemented. Can you discuss this in more detail?
Okay, so the discussion on menstrual leave must be understood in the context of the societies in which menstruation has been used to marginalize and oppress women and other menstruators through the process of what we call objectification and the ideology of sexism. So to explain that further, workers who take advantage of menstrual leave policies could be perceived more negatively than those who do not use the policy. And this can be explained as hostile sexism, which assumes that women do not belong in the workplace, that kind of mentality. There is also the medicalization of menstruation, where menstrual leave may perpetuate the idea that menstruation is debilitating for all or most women, and that women are not capable of working efficiently while menstruating, which is not the case for everyone. The idea of menstrual leave, you know, can reinforce beliefs that menstruation is an illness that impedes all women, making it appear like a health issue that is associated with symptoms and risks. We have to make it clear that it's not everyone's experience, but people who have these experiences need to have their rights upheld when it comes to menstrual leave. Further to this, there is also what we call benevolent sexism, which is a way of viewing sex and gender in a stereotypical, traditional way. So benevolent sexism implies that menstruation is a sign of feminine fragility, of womanhood, and reinforces the stereotype that the woman's purpose in life is to bear children. So benevolent sexism can be hard to detect and may not actively put hostile feelings forward, but it does perpetuate a patriarchal system of gendered power dynamics. So menstrual leave can masquerade as a way of protecting the well-being of menstruators, and like benevolent sexism, may still work to undermine menstruators' well-being. For example, benevolent sexism occurring in the context of menstrual leave is evident in Japan's menstrual leave policy, which was created to protect women's capacity to bear children. And Zambia also has a policy which highlights women's presumed role as mothers or future mothers. So there are these implications, the potential implications of menstrual leave. These are determined by the way the policy is worded and by the way the policy is implemented. That is, like, the intentions that underlie the creation of such a policy. These can determine the outcome.
And now for a quick intermission. At PKF Malta, we are enthusiastic about encouraging startups to flourish. We provide a wide range of professional services necessary for startups to take off, such as assistance with company formation, license applications, setting up bank accounts, auditing, accounting, and tax advice. We've also founded Bitpod, which provides startups with readily available office space. Email us on info@pkfmalta.com to find out more.
And what actions can be taken to decrease the stigma attached to women's menstruation?
I would add that discussion about menstruation among all employees may foster support for women's reproductive health and reproductive rights, and may also help to educate people about menstruation, since there are many misconceptions still. And there's also a heteropatriarchal culture in our society. So the language used in menstrual leave policies, for example, must be created with the intention to ensure that there is normalization of the menstruation of women, that it is seen as something which is a deterrent for women in the workplace. So open discussion on menstruation that does not objectify them, that does not perpetuate sexism, and that does not perpetuate patriarchal misconceptions about menstruation. There are people who propose menstrual leave who argue that these kind of policies have had the potential to destigmatize discussion on menstruation in the workplace and to bring menstruation to light. It violates the culture that mandates that we keep menstruation concealed. So those who opt to use menstrual leave may put themselves at risk because they may violate a culture where the cultural norm about menstruation is not to disclose it. So when you are unmasking menstruation in public spaces, when you're talking about it and being open about it, it might contribute to, rather than dismantle, menstrual stigma. Menstrual leave might also perpetuate the belief that menstruation is something about which to be ashamed and to keep private, and therefore to avoid in the workplace. So we need to keep challenging menstrual stigma. We need to keep challenging these heteropatriarchal beliefs. We need to keep talking about them, educating people about them so that they are dismantled, so that they are undone. This is the way in which menstrual leave policies will only advance gender equality if they are adopted in spaces that are committed to challenging this kind of ideology, this kind of menstrual stigma.
I agree with you. It looks like a taboo or something that you should be ashamed of when talking about menstruation. And I think if we talk it more in public spaces, they could be accepted, the idea, and it could be removed as from a taboo. Yes. And where there are any successful countries in implementing the menstrual leave policy, and what can be learned from them?
We can learn from both the mistakes and the successes of other countries who implemented these kind of policies. There are different, diverse menstrual leave policies across the globe, and the current discussion is whether or not to extend such policies. And we need to think critically about both the potential benefits and the drawbacks that could result from the implementation of such menstrual leave policies. They can and they may masquerade a way of protecting the well-being of menstruators, like we mentioned, benevolent sexism, which may undermine the menstruators' well-being. Like, for example, we mentioned the policy in Japan, which was created to protect women's capacity to bear children, and the one in Zambia, which highlights women's presumed role as mothers. So the successes would lie in foreseeing the rights of women, their sexual and reproductive rights, and their rights on the workplace, not their role as fragile, feminine mothers, mothers-to-be. So we need to take that direction rather than the other one.
Exactly. And having said this, do you think that we are close to implement it or not?
There are still discussions. There are still discussions going on. But there is, all of a sudden, I feel that there is more impetus in the media. And there is dialogue about this phenomenon that was never discussed. Even in our childhood, in our adolescence, it's something which is very concealed. Now we're talking about it in public spaces, in public fora. So that's already a change. That's already an achievement. I think eventually it will become something so normalized that we will look back and say, oh, this was something that we used to be ashamed of once upon a time, but look where we've come in terms of women's issues.
There's like a way forward to it.
Yes.
And do you like to add something else with regards to this, maybe?
Yes, I think I would add that it's important that younger children, as I mentioned, children of school age who aren't menstruators, but also who are starting to grow and understand what menstruation is, the kind of education where menstruation is not stigmatized, where it's not something negative about women's sexuality, about women's reproduction, and women's sexual health, it needs to be, and not something shameful either. We're brought up with this idea of concealing our menstruation, hiding the effects, hiding anything that has to do with our menstruation. I think this kind of mentality has to change. These ideas of hiding, of concealment, were very much also related to how menstruation is seen as something maybe even dirty in some religions, or something unhealthy, undesirable. But we need to change that mind frame. And if we change that mind frame, I think the idea of menstrual leave will become something more practical for employers, but also something less stigmatized even for the women themselves.
Yes, exactly as you said, the mentality has to be educated from a young age so that the people will be brought up in with the idea that it's not something to look at it as a taboo or something shameful.
Yeah, exactly.
So thank you very much, Dr. Claire, for such an informative discussion. And I am sure that it was very fruitful to our listeners.
My pleasure.
You're welcome. And also, I invite all our listeners to stay up to date with our socials, as we will be having other interesting discussions. Thank you for...
Thank you for listening to Bit Podcast. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter.